A crucial bond payment deadline for Russia passes as world leaders renew talk of fresh sanctions. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The G7 summit of top industrialized nations is underway in Germany's Bavarian Alps today. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has been taking part remotely and was expected to call again for more weapons support to resist Russia's invasion. Reports say leaders are planning to make what a White House draft calls an unprecedented long-term security commitment to Ukraine, which includes tighter sanctions and more defense equipment. But they've also acknowledged the global consequences of defending Ukraine, particularly skyrocketing food and energy prices. It's a noticeable impact. Russia's government newspaper is also calling out today, as the BBC's Steve Rosenberg reports from Moscow.
The Russian government newspaper today dismisses attempts by the G7 to increase the economic pressure on Russia. The G7's vain attempts to hit Russia with new sanctions will inevitably affect the global economy and will come back to hit the initiators of these restrictions like a boomerang. But in the Russian press today, more evidence that sanctions are having an impact on the Russian economy. Независимая газета. The Russian economy is on the verge of falling into a deflationary spin. An interesting editorial in Независимая today claims that President Putin still retains domestic support despite the economic problems. It is one of the most extraordinary phenomena of Putin's Russia. For a whole decade, the authorities have demonstrated a total inability to ensure a growth in citizens' incomes. But it's as if citizens don't notice this and continue to enthusiastically support the authorities in all they do.
That's the BBC's Steve Rosenberg reporting there. Well, more of the financial reality for Russia. It appears to now be in default on its international debt obligations. A 30-day grace period to make a $100 million payment in euros expired last night with no sign that creditors have received the money. The Kremlin says there are no grounds for default since it's sanctions and not a lack of assets preventing payments from being processed. Still, Tim Ash, an economist at Blue Bay Asset Management, explains how significant this all is for Russia's access to global finance now and in the future.
There's been this game between the Russian Minister of Finance and the US Treasury to push Russia into default. And what it means essentially is that the US Treasury determine when Russia goes into default. And that's important because it means that the US Treasury will determine when Russia comes out of default. Now, longer term, it will keep Russia's borrowing costs high for a long time. Now, Russia will think, okay, we're not paying Western creditors, but the people like the Chinese don't care about all this. Not really. I think when a country goes into default, Chinese creditors will think long and hard about, you know, whether Russia is a good credit risk. And more broadly, it will impact on Russia's ability to access global markets.
And there are some technical, I guess, disagreements, if we could call it that, two different dates floating around in various media reports today about the last time Russia found itself in this situation. Why is there such a discrepancy between the two dates?
Well, it's kind of ridiculous to argue that it was 1917 or 1918. Russia defaulted in 1998. If you go back to 98, Russia defaulted on some Soviet-era liabilities that were restructured but were the obligation of Russia. That happened in August 98. Russia had some Russian-era issued euro bonds that fell due in November, and it actually went ahead and paid those. So the Russians pretended that, oh, the Russian Federation didn't really default. Well, it did. It looks good in newspaper headlines that the first default for 100 years, but it's really not true.
Tim Ash at Blue Bay Asset Management, thanks so much for your time this morning.
My pleasure.
A quick check of some other numbers now. There's optimism in global stock markets today as China continues to ease its strict COVID-19 restrictions. Benchmarks across Asia ended up in the 1% to 2.3% range. More muted gains here in Europe, with benchmarks up in the 0.5% to 1% range. Western allies might be turning their backs on Russia for its war in Ukraine, but Sri Lanka is desperately turning toward it for help as an economic crisis there worsens. The BBC's Suita Nohar reports cabinet ministers will travel to Russia and Qatar today to try to strike a deal for cheap oil after Sri Lanka's government said it's essentially run out.
For months now, the sound of protests have rung out across the Sri Lankan capital, Colombo. People are running out of patience. They've had enough of the fuel shortages and the daily power cuts. Those who want to get fuel have to queue for hours, even days, like this rickshaw driver.
We are waiting from here from the 6 a.m. So still they are not promised if oil is coming or not. Even they have increased the price. They are not advised to people to what we have to do. They are not providing the solution. So we are asking from the government what they give the solution for us.
In the past 2 months, Sri Lanka largely received fuel via an Indian credit line, but that ran out in mid-June. The Energy Minister, Kanchana Vijayasekara, says a petrol shipment was due last Thursday, but that failed to arrive. He said they were struggling to find suppliers.
So there were certain proposers that accepted the agreement, and after their financial proposals were reviewed, one agreement was chosen. He was offered the agreement, but unfortunately it has been 2 weeks. That agreement has not been honoured. We are also looking at possible avenues to see whether there are other suppliers who can match the same agreement details. So we are working with a few other people as well.
A US delegation and a team from the International Monetary Fund are in Sri Lanka to assess the situation. And now cabinet ministers hope they can convince Qatar and Russia to give them the oil which they so badly need.
That's the BBC's Sunita Nehar reporting there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.